It's Wednesday, June 24th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 153 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
My name's Pat.
Pat and John can't agree on the order there.
The order is around the table.
I just always go after Chad.
Well, you're usually the next seat.
That's true.
Pat, there was something I was holding for the next episode, but I just can't wait. You see, there's a general complaint on the forum that you don't talk enough on the show, which is a complaint that I have to agree with.
Uh-huh.
And so what I decided to do is I want to do something here to help our listeners learn a little about you, since you're not talking enough for them to learn anything about you.
Okay.
And so I have a little survey that we're going to do here. And this is like all those other gaming style surveys where I'm going to ask you a few questions and you're going to rank these on how true they are from a scale of 0, meaning it's not true at all, to a scale of 5, meaning it sounds exactly like you.
Okay.
Okay. And based on this, we're going to learn a little something about Pat. And there's 8 questions here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Question number 1. Over the last month, how often have you had a sensation of not emptying your bladder completely after you finish?
Finish what?
5, all is 1, okay. Number 2, during the last month, how often have you had to urinate again less than 2 hours after you finished urinating?
Oh, that's a 5. I have a small bladder. I pee all the time. It's terrible.
Number 3. During the last month, how often have you stopped and started again several times when you're urinating? I can't even do this.
I love this survey. This is just like gamer surveys that I've heard of before.
Yes. This is about as useful as anything else you'll find in RPG Net or Eonora.
I was really hoping to go for a perfect 40 here, but repeat the last one.
Oh, please don't.
No, please do.
During the last month, how often have you stopped and started again several times when you urinate?
I can just sense a bunch of people, their finger moving towards that fast forward button.
During the last month, how often have you found it difficult to postpone urination? I mean, I've seen you wet the chair at least once during the show.
I've heard of potty humor.
6? All right. Well, we'll just put a 5.
Ba-dum-tsh.
During the last month, how often have you had a weak urinary stream?
0.
0. That's good.
I blast porcelain off the bowl, people.
During the last month, how often have you had to push or strain to begin urination?
Okay, if stage frights counts, I would have to answer like 3 on that one. I'm really shy.
How many times do you most typically get up to urinate from the time you went to bed until the time you get up in the morning?
Once.
Okay.
That's not really a 1 to 5 answer.
How would you feel if you had to live with your urinary condition the way it is now? Would you say how's it affecting your quality of life?
I'm used to it.
So
it's fine.
So it's a 0.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, according to this, there is a moderate likelihood that you have BPH. So you might want to see your doctor to get that checked out. And I don't care how eager he is to stick his finger in your butt. Chris is not a doctor. So I hope this has really been educational to you.
A big prostate.
Hyperplasia. Yeah.
Power 16-2 rolls on. The Denny's League first round results from 2 weeks ago. Batman at 57% beats out the Battlemaster at 43%. Unicron at 41% beat out Capital Ships.
How does Batman beat a Battlemaster?
He prepares in advance. Didn't you see the picture?
Oh, yeah.
He came prepared.
That's right.
Unicron lost to Capital Ships 41% to 59%.
How sad.
Dark Lord of Denny's gets annihilated by Julie Hussey.
I think we all saw that one coming.
30% to 70%.
He is afraid of women.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say he's humiliated in his own league, but a man who's LARPing in Denny's, you cannot humiliate this guy.
Well, I wonder if it's a matter of strategy, though. I wonder if he took his strongest contender, went up against her, and threw the fight on purpose just to ensure that she maybe was able to.
Some of these Dark Lord of Denny's guys are the world can't get me down if I humiliate myself as much as possible type people. So that's a good theory, Chad.
I think you're interpolating intelligence into chaos, if you want my honest opinion.
No, I think
interpolating.
I think he has a plan. I don't think that the Dark Lord of Denny's even knows what interpolating means.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Damn it, Pat, and I've got to rescore you. And we thought we knew what gaming style you were. Now we just don't. It's why Pat brings such a great perspective. He's the only Uranist at the table.
That's true.
I mean, the rest of us might be narrativists or whatever, but he's the only Uranist. But anyway, Plot Wagon. Pat, I'm sorry to give this one to you. This is some bad news here. Plot Wagon, 65% over Samuel Jackson's 35%.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's it. The man sticking it to my boy Stanley again.
I was in the elevator today with a guy who looked exactly like Mr. Arnold from Jurassic Park.
Did he get eaten off a toilet?
No, that was Donald Gennaro. Mr. Arnold was the Samuel L. Jackson computer engineer. He got torn up by raptors.
Mm.
They're clever, you know. I love the book, hated the movie, and...
They can operate doorknobs.
And the movie. And the Unix system.
And the Unix system, yes.
So this
book
week...
was better.
This week...
Book was better.
I agree. I don't know why.
Have you read the book?
Yes.
Every snobby literary plebeian spouts out the book was better about everything.
I liked his older work better than his newer stuff.
In this case, it was true. And I don't espouse that about everything. I actually thought Fight Club was a little bit better of a movie than the book, but both were very enjoyable. I thought
Fight Club had... wide differences.
Yes.
The endings were 180 degrees apart.
Yeah. I would almost say that the movie of Fight Club was a tad more coherent than the book.
I would say so.
Any Jane Austen movie is better than the book because it's a hell of a lot shorter.
Except for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which has yet to be filmed.
True.
So this week you will be voting on the second round of the Denny's League, Batman versus Capital Ships, and Julie Hussey versus the Plot Wagon.
Oh, she's... wait. I can't say anything.
I know.
Can't influence the vote. Cannot influence the vote.
I'm so going to smack you in the face.
Why?
Because you almost screwed up like Dan was last week.
I want to remind everyone that in addition to being an important decision-making tool on the future of gaming, the Power 16 is also a contest. We have a stack of gift certificates from Catalyst Games.
Like, we have to sweeten the deal to get people to decide the fate of the universe.
Well, I know, but you know what? In this case, decision-making, voting is not its own reward.
You know what was funny? You make fun of me all the time for making hand gestures and stuff, because I talk with my hands kind of person.
I'm talking with a pen.
I know, and you're talking with a pen, and you made this, all I can describe it as is a Dan gesture. This sort of thing that I just did that no one can see made absolutely perfect sense to me.
Okay, I appreciate that. It was Italian.
Yes.
But we have a stack of gift certificates from Catalyst Games, and the way that we are going to do this is once this contest is over, we are going to take a look at the email addresses that people submitted with their entries, and we will take an email address once per bracket. So if you use the same email address to vote once on each bracket, then you will be entered that many times. So it will behoove you to keep coming back week after week to vote with the same email address. And based on that, we will draw some winners and we will be distributing. I don't have the exact dollar amounts yet, but we'll be distributing two, three or four separate stacks of these Catalyst cards. And we'll make sure that everyone has enough to either get a book or at least come pretty freaking close to getting a free book from Catalyst. Mm-hmm. And a big thanks to Catalyst for giving us those.
Yeah.
They're actually leftover prizes from Fear the Con 2 that came in too late to be used in Fear the Con 2.
I think they came in not but a day or two after the con ended. It was like real close. Probably just got mail mix up or something.
Listener asked us to plug a charity, so we'll give a quick shout out to this. The charity is called Can't Stop the Serenity, and you can find it at can'tstoptheserenity.com, obviously without the apostrophe, and I'll link this in the show notes. And this is a charity being sponsored by Joss Whedon, where what they're doing is they're showing the movie Serenity in various theaters around the country. And if you go to their site, there's a link at the top for events, which will tell you when that's going to be shown in which cities and where. There is actually a showing coming up in St. Louis. And if you go and attend this movie, the ticket price is being used to raise money for a charity called Equality Now, which I'm not intimately familiar with, but as best as I understand it, it's focused on stopping violence against women, sex trafficking, you know, other causes I think we can all generally agree on. If you're interested in that, check the show notes and see if there's an event coming up in your area. If you enjoyed the movie or a Firefly/Serenity fan, then, you know, stop by and support a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So episode 153, I have to make some amends here. Because in episode 152, I said
this is the math thing.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
You know, I didn't go back and listen to that. I think you're right. No, actually, I did. You were right. You didn't say that 153 was a prime number itself. Well, you just said that it was comprised of prime numbers. But
Chad, do you have an extra one of those game things?
It's Unity.
Here, did you know, though? I'll call up a two-player game. Can we play
Tank Wars or whatever the hell, Scorched Earth? All right.
Yes.
At one point, history, one was considered a prime number, but it's not anymore.
Yeah, they went back and forth. And like I said in the forums, the reason I balked last week was that I knew that it wasn't a prime number, but I couldn't remember the definition. So since I couldn't spout off the definition and say that's why it's not prime, I didn't want to, half-ass.
Tank fine?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I apologize.
I'll just randomize the weapons.
One's not a prime number, but let me give you three.
I know you don't have NATO versus Warsaw Pact on that thing, but
no,
we can roleplay.
Yes.
Let me give you three facts about 153 that are mathematically true.
Mm-hmm.
The first is if you add the first 17 numbers together, so 1 plus 2 plus 3 all the way up to plus 17, you get 153.
Mm-hmm.
The second is if you take 1 factorial plus 2 factorial plus 3 factorial plus 4 factorial plus 5 factorial, you get 153. And third,
it's been years. You'll have to forgive me.
If you,
do you need instruction, or
yes,
will you?
Please.
Okay.
If you cube the digits, so 1 cube
you
plus
adjust the angle,
5 cube plus 3 cube,
okay,
you get 153.
That's the most. That's the coolest
power
one in my mind. Just the interestingness
adjust
of the
power
number
like that.
You know what the most fascinating thing going on right now is?
What would that be, Dan?
Like that?
They're pretending to be all bent out of shape about our math facts while they're playing a geometry-based trajectory shooting.
Oh, I know.
Is there any sort of like aimer thing, or do you just have to have played the game to know how powerful 20 is?
You just have to understand.
You
want to
go between
physics and
50,
math,
50 and 70,
and geometry,
at a 60 degree angle.
Okay.
All right. So anyway,
I hate for them to actually try to play pool or something too.
Episode 153, here's how this is going.
Oh my god, are you boring nerds done already? John, they're done. Let's talk about roleplaying.
Hold on, I'm going to get one shot in.
All right.
Now remember, this will require angles and
I don't know
velocity.
What the hell Mountain Mover is, I just nailed you with it.
Yeah, it does no damage. But
well, now you're in a hole. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, episode 153, here's how this is going to work.
Pocket tanks for the iPhone.
For a good while, Chad used to post picture previews of the episodes while he was editing the sound. Now, since then, the sound editing's been passed around a few times, currently I do.
Noticeable degradation in sound quality.
Actually, noticeable improvement. I'm probably the most anal editor this show's ever had. Thank you very much.
Huh? Anal?
Hmm? But
why didn't you edit last week into something that would work so we don't have to do this again?
Because
yeah, that's right. We
because
this is
some
take two
douchebags
on this
have such bad mic habits.
Yeah, this
John,
is my fault.
It was. I will show you the sound wave. But Chad stopped doing those, and Chris picked up doing them, and one of our forum users came up with the idea of what if we did it in reverse, where they came up with a picture preview for an episode that has never been recorded.
20 pages of forum porn.
And we are going to make an episode based on those pictures. And the idea here is we're not going to be too literal. It's just kind of a Rorschach test. Whatever comes to mind is what we're going to talk about. And then I will post in the show notes a link to a thread where I will show the 10 pictures we are using in the order that we are using them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull these slides up locally. We're not going to talk about them directly. We're just going to talk about whatever comes to mind. And if nobody talks, then I will just point at somebody and make them talk. So let's get this party started.
You know that one con vendor that has like 800 cheesy shirts?
I've often wondered that.
Yeah.
When I go to a convention, you walk through the floor, and I'm not talking about people that are presenting. I'm not talking about like White Wolf's booth. I'm talking about like the con huckster.
Yes.
The guy who...
Well, some cons have entire rooms of hucksters. In fact, many do.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm thinking this guy.
Right. Yeah. And what they do is they just have stacks of memorabilia from various obscure sci-fi shows. They have witty t-shirts, typically all black. And when I talk to some of these people, they tell me, oh, this is just something I do just for us one con. But a bunch of them I've talked to, there was a year at a local convention, we interviewed a bunch of these people, and that's what they do as a full-time job. Yeah,
they go from con to con.
You could go weekend to weekend, con to con, for at least 5 months uninterrupted from, you know, March
sort of
until
con season. You know what blows me away about con vendors and con hucksters, of any kind of con, is that back in the day, when Dan and I were kids and we were going to these conventions and stuff, this was like before the internet, and you would go to these cons and they would have memorabilia and different things like that that you just couldn't go into a shop and get, because it was a very specific nerd-based sort of stuff. Yeah. A lot of it was handcrafted.
Well, even now, you go to a convention, you can find first edition rule books that are nowhere.
No. I think it would be really tough to find something on a dealer room floor that you could not, A, get on the internet, and B, get cheaper. And
go buy it from eBay now.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think that there's a couple
of
specialty...
Even eBay doesn't have everything, though.
I think that there's a couple of specialty things that are, like, handmade by people, and they put their crafts up. But even then, those people would...
I think even books.
Those people would have, like, Etsy stores and selling it on eBay and stuff.
I don't think you can find the entirety of the ridiculous library of, like, late 90s second edition titles. Dancy was telling us, how many books was WotC putting out a year at the end of second edition?
I don't
remember. 400?
At most, I will give you that you can mine a special little gem that you have your heart's desire on out of a large con, but 99% of the stuff
I get
in
you.
There
your
is...
point was... That was when the wagon came to town.
Yeah.
And we have no perception of that anymore The wagon is online all the time.
Yeah. Yep. Well, all right, let me break this down then to just a very simple, realistic question. Within the past 5 years, has anyone sitting at this table bought something from a convention other than dice or a game that is either currently or very recently in print?
I used to buy like, these goofy t-shirts, bought one a year.
T-shirts, wall hanger swords.
I don't think I've done it in the last 5 years.
Crystal
this was something
dragons.
I did like when I just started hanging out with Chad 8 years ago.
I'm racking my brains to see if I bought it. I guess I have to say yes, I did, because I bought things at Fear the Con, too.
Well,
and that's a con, we had a dealer's room.
But what did you buy at Fear the Con, too?
I bought dice, and I bought...
Which just was an exemption.
Why are dice an exemption?
The only two things I'm exempting, just because...
Gamer supplies
is dice and games that are either in print or very recently in print, such that you could just count this as the back...
Well,
the
third edition
Then I have to say that I bought Pirates of the Burning Sea... Constructible card game, Pirates of the
Curse.
Recently
in print.
Recently in print. I mean, it's out of print now.
But what I'm getting at is...
I bought a Leprechaun hat. That's what you're getting at.
What Jed's trying to say is
no. But that was a long, long, long time ago. It wasn't
he's taking the long way around, which he always does, and he's actually saying no, he hasn't.
I'm trying
to
remember...
That was the answer to your question. And he's doing it in as long a way as possible because he loves the sound of his own voice.
Now I know why we don't let you talk. I'm trying to remember if I bought anything at Gen Con last year. And... Don't remember if I did or not.
I think you bought that chainmail bikini.
Oh, yeah.
That I love on you, by the way.
Yeah, that rusted off. Thanks a lot. Well, on the t-shirt thing, too, I also want to say that there's two kinds of t-shirt vendors at cons, if you've noticed, if the con is big enough. One is t-shirts that they go and they order from in bulk from some distributor.
Right.
Whatever, and it's from distributors and it's licensed, all that. The second kind is... homemade illegal t-shirts, bootleg t-shirts of stuff that they don't have permission to put on t-shirts, like copyrighted characters.
You know
and whatnot?
What pissed the hell out of me?
What's
I think
that?
It was on, I'm not even gonna name the website because that's advertising, I'm sure somebody will name it in the forum. Someone has a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt where like Hobbes is tearing Calvin's guts out. I don't even care about that.
Yeah,
what I care about is that they have a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt. Because Bill Watterson fought tooth and nail for 10 years, sacrificing untold millions so that Calvin and Hobbes wouldn't show up on a t-shirt.
Yeah, and then
so that he would be the start and finish of his own artistic product.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest reasons he actually quit.
Yeah,
and the syndicate I hate that because that is absolutely my favorite cartoon.
Yeah, that's my favorite. It's probably my favorite anything. It's just my favorite.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. I mean, I was just devastated that he quit, and that was one of the big things why is he was absolutely vehemently against that. He did not want to
profit. So if any of you have a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt, I will pay you for its ashes.
That's very true.
Maybe, yeah, and you maybe know what pay else, a nickel. But...
And you know what else those two types of shirts they have in common?
What?
They're all on black.
Yes.
That's the only color that they can make
have
a
you
shirt on.
Been to a sci-fi
black.
Convention lately?
No.
It is a
black
sea.
Black is the new black.
Yes,
it's
I know.
A sea
have
of
these
black
people
t-shirts
ever heard of anything else? Why does it have to... Oh, why only black? Why?
It's a reflection
why not
of your
some
because
if, why not a blue? A brown, even. I understand they
Firefly
don't want
people
white.
Wear brown.
You don't want white. It's just whatever. It's plebeian. Okay, fine,
Pat,
whatever.
The
but
gaming
why
metrosexual.
Not? Hey,
what the hell
you know
is
what?
This plebeian day?
Exactly. I just want something other than black.
Plebes are rising
and
up.
You know what I want to know?
And Pat is their
thing.
Leader.
You got these games are out there who most of them are not beanpole thin by
I blame
any means.
You for this.
And they are
you
wearing,
told him that he didn't talk enough.
They're wearing black, the hottest color you can think of. Everything they wear is black. I'm like, my God, it's like a sweat lodge.
A big
I don't wear black.
Lodge.
I own no black clothing because
Pat, have
I'm
you ever
hot.
Smelled a game room?
You know, it's times like those where I wish I didn't have to smell like Dave, but yes, I have.
Well, this is not a single element you're talking about. This is one part of an ecology.
Yeah, so I'm just saying I want a
dust
a,
off
something
my
other
black
than a black
Akira
freaking
t-shirt
shirt.
Here. Screw you, buddy. I like my t-shirt.
Well, it's perhaps the real scientific fact we can walk away with here is that black is not a slimming color.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Is it?
Yes.
Or is it not?
It is.
It's supposed, okay. supposed to be a slimming color.
It's because it makes you sweat because you're so friggin' hot.
I like the Dave Barry vertical stripes theory. Vertical stripes are slimming, but unfortunately they scream to the whole world, hey, everybody, I'm fat and this is slimming.
Have you guys ever run a game based on news headlines?
No.
You know how there's that spate of TV shows? I guess it's still going on, particularly through the 90s. Ripped straight from the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
All these court and cop dramas and stuff. Where
chong
they,
chong.
Or they would.
Sorry. Everybody get that. Do,
do. Base it.
That was
on,
my away message the other day. Just a, dun, dun, a YouTube link to it. Nothing but it.
Dun, dun, dun.
But have you guys ever run a game?
No.
Based on a news headline?
No.
Nope.
That sounds
never.
Really
have
hard
you?
To do and stupid.
And I am really big into the news. I
well, and here's a question.
Listen to and read the news. All
why
the time.
Not? Because Chad, you in particular. Take a lot of inspiration from books you read, movies you see, manga, whatever. You get a concept, you think it's really cool, you decide to spin it into a game.
Because to me, news is very disposable, and it's very here and now, and I consume it and then discard it, and then I move on to the next news and I consume it and I discard it. There's the overall history of what is going on.
Right.
Like, well, say Iran
okay.
right now, and there's all that turmoil in Iran right now. You know, you read all these different headlines of all these different things going
on. I think
they
were on, like, thread 41 when I left FARC this morning.
Yeah. It's like all these different things are going on, and you get all these different headlines and all these different news things, and the individual headlines don't have an impact on me. This happened. This person said this. This person disappeared. These amount of people were killed. There was this riot. There was this police crackdown. All those things are interesting to me, but, you know, those are just little news points that are very disposable. I just consume them.
Well, but
the overall story...
Right.
See, I can base a game on the overall story of
right.
what's going on. Maybe not take place in Iran, although you could do a game that takes place in Iran and in that situation. Like a modern-day thing. Like, wouldn't it be interesting to do a Vampire Masquerade game that's all, like, Persian-based, but modern-day, but it's going on in Iran, and basically the whole Tehran is falling apart and in all this turmoil, but you still have to keep on the down-low?
It wouldn't even have to be in Iran. It could just be something where you're trying to get your puppet of the vampire clan
yeah.
into a leadership position, but he lost the vote.
Right.
And so now
right.
there's a popular uprising. You have to deal with it politically.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking you could even, like a BattleTech game, you're assigned to peace duty
right.
on a planet as part of the garrison, and something like this goes down.
Or an espionage game, too, where, again... Throw it back into modern day, into the situations that are going on right now, and your CIA agents in Iran. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do.
Yeah.
Or you can have Daniel Perez's game with Ahmadinejad in a Hitler uniform and magic Jews. I kind of want to play that game.
So
what does that text say?
It says Gen Con helping gamers hook up since 1967.
I don't think any gamers hooked up with that chick, nor do I think that she is a gamer. I mean, that's paint with a broad brush right there. It's obviously possible, but...
Somebody at one point gave me her website. Supposedly she really is a gamer and does con appearances and stuff.
Exhibitionistic chicks at cons.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You're there. I'm there.
Hey, okay. Man. No. Spandex and a short skirt is a privilege, not a right.
Well, there's a corollary discussion. Ratio of they who should to they who shouldn't.
All right.
1 to 10, maybe?
Yeah.
You know what I appreciate about her? She's not wearing a black t-shirt.
She's wearing black boots.
And the schoolgirl skirt.
There's not much wrong with that.
You know
what I've always wondered?
I would look at that and say, skank, and then move on.
This is a moral
The shallowness
quandary.
Of sexuality in America?
Yeah.
No. This is a moral quandary. Uh-oh. Let's say you're working like in a Kathy Lee Gifford sweatshop. And your particular sweatshop makes bikinis. You're sitting there, and at some point, you're asked to stitch together, or maybe you're the machinist who made the conveyor, or maybe you're even the designer who made the patterns. A triple XL spandex suit. Or a triple XL bikini.
I think it only can...
That's like loading cartridges for Nazis.
Yeah.
You're complicit when you're sitting on the factory line.
Exactly. At some point, don't you feel any kind of a moral...
No. I think that just confirms the world's stereotypes about Americans.
I don't care if it's in America or where it's at. Any nation on the face of the earth. Don't you feel any kind of moral... compunction here,
Dan,
where
you, Dan,
I
Dan.
Just ought not do this.
Fat chicks need loving too.
The market is a moralizing force, man. Poor people get more food here than they do in command economies.
I think that
there's
great.
Another side to that coin.
I think that it's great that you have a lot of heavier chicks who are more comfortable with their bodies than they were 10 years ago.
I just don't want them to be that comfortable.
You know, while we're talking about your mom, Chad.
She's a fat chick.
Check
what?
The forum notes. There's a tie-in in the pictures there that isn't coming across here on the mics.
Yeah. Well, you know.
One thing I have never bought at a con.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I have never, I don't think, ever owned and used at all.
I was going to say sex before you said that. One thing I've never bought at a con.
No.
A bumper sticker.
I don't like putting bumper stickers on my car.
I don't either. Yeah. For
you know what?
Reason.
I had a bumper sticker thought today. I never have, and I never thought of, but then I was walking past the secretary's desk, and I saw a sticker on a corkboard that said, "Please don't hit me." I've been hit twice in the last 6 months while minding my peaceable business trying to go to school. I kind of want that bumper sticker, because please don't hit me.
Intentionally?
So, no, I've just been rear-ended at 100 million miles an hour.
Oh, you had like, a car, okay.
In December, and then again in, like, March.
Okay. You drive around a lot of Chinese people, don't you?
No, they were both white girls.
I'm stuck on that one, too.
It's a stereotype in some circles that Asian people are poor drivers. I don't think that. I was told that by an Asian.
Wow. I can bring up the stereotypes, like you can get your little book of odd, quirky sayings.
This little book?
That little book.
Did you buy it again, or did you find it?
I found it. Somebody on the forums asked me about the history of a phrase, and I found it. Where you people thought you could cleverly hide it from me.
Why don't you look...
You know, this picture doesn't tell me anything about role-playing games.
I've never put a bumper sticker on my car for two reasons. And I thought about this, well, partially because of what we're looking at, but also because of the fact that's one of the things... That's all the time sold at gaming conventions.
That's
true.
Chaotic evil means never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah, my other car is a broomstick. You're just a tasty
little... Don't meddle in the affairs of dragons.
Yeah, you're just a tasty little treat or
whatever.
There's
like 500 of those at every nerd con, and none of them are funny.
I've never put a bumper stick on my car for two reasons. One is when I go to resell the car, I don't want to have to try and get it off. Now, I realize that's fixed by the advent of the static sticker, which you can peel right off. But the second reason is because I have never felt the need to define or express myself by the ass end of my car. I mean, is there anyone here who has ever been like, man, I am really pro or anti this until you saw that one bumper sticker? And ever since then, you've your heart's
coexist.
Been-
what have I been thinking all these years? I mean, come on.
I've seen a few bumper stickers with some very clever political turns of phrase, but no, nothing has changed my mind.
I really like bumper stickers. I think they're funny and clever in a sort of droll way. But I would never put one on my car because you know why? I can't see it.
Well,
why would I do that?
And now half the world's going to cut you off.
Okay, excellent. As long as they have good bumper stickers.
I just like to come across that one car every once in a while that has 50 bumper stickers on it. And, you know, you're trying to drive as close as you can to read things because the print on them is so damn small. You literally either have to be stopped right behind them or you're like, you're almost going
to
rear in them.
Who are we talking to?
That was the problem.
Was it you, John? They said that they wanted to do bumper stickers of every single presidential campaign,
but that was
the failed candidates.
My favorite bumper stickers to see are old, old political ones. Like one time when I was working at Deerbrook, the first time, which was years and years ago, I saw a bumper sticker that said, "Wake me up in 96 and tell me it's okay." And I just giggled my head off. It's like, this guy's pissed about Bill Clinton getting elected the first time. And it's 10 years later. Now it's 20 years later. It's still funny.
All jokes aside, I understand the desire of human beings to express themselves. And some people choose to do that through their bumpers. What I don't get, and this is along the lines of what Pat's talking about, it's not the guy who's got 50 bumper stickers. But you put a bumper sticker on your car, it's a monkey trap. All right, for anyone who doesn't know what a monkey trap is, it's a way of getting rid of monkeys where you take a gourd and you put like a piece of fruit in it, and it's like when a monkey reaches in there, it's the hole is the right size. He can reach in there, but while the fruit's in his hand, he can't get it out of the gourd. He ends up eventually dying that way or something to that effect. I don't know. Rudyard Kipling, whatever. But bumper stickers are a monkey
trap. Indeed, Rudyard Kipling, whatever.
If you have one on your car, people are going to attempt to read it. What I have never understood is when people have bumper stickers that have super tiny print. And so you have to write up
that are a paragraph.
Well, some of them say, if you can read this, get off my ass or whatever. But many of them on your ass to read it.
Yeah, but many of them don't. They're not trying to be ironic.
Yeah.
It's the bumper sticker just has tiny or really hard to read print to where you have to risk a collision to read what this person wants you to read.
You know what I hate?
Page and a half of Che.
You know what I hate? These aren't bumper stickers. I hate it when it's girls' asses. Have you ever seen a girl who's like a hot-looking girl?
You're not going to get me started on this, are you?
And they have like shorts on, like nice tight shorts or whatever. And they're very trying to have a very nice butt and whatnot. And they have writing on the back. And it's not just MIT or UMSL or whatever, you know, like
oftentimes
four letters.
It is, but
oftentimes
some of my
it
favorites
is.
Are the ones juicy.
Yeah.
Or pink.
I've seen ones where it's like
a sentence. Are you talking
about
butt pants or tattoos?
No. The on the
shorts.
The butt pants.
So this girl, a girl comes walking by, and then your eyes are following her butt, and you're squinting and staring real hard at her butt, and you're just trying to read a sentence, but you look like the scum doing it.
Carla has a pair of those shorts that we got in Grand Cayman several years ago, and I think it says Grand Cayman or Cayman on it. I don't think I've ever seen more in public.
Her butt says Cayman on it?
Yeah, I got that too. I just wasn't going there.
No, it was funny. You're laughing.
Funny. I am laughing on the inside.
I think she
apparently
only,
so is she.
She only wears.
Oh, he doesn't have a gun.
All right, I'm just going to let that go. But she only wears them, like, around the house or to sleep in. But what really gets me is not shorts like that. It's when the ones you're talking about where it says, like, juicy or sexy or porn star or something, and it's on, like, a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And this is another moral one. When you're making Junior and Mrs. clothing that say porn star, don't you feel any kind of moral...
Like I said, I think it just reinforces stereotypes about Americans to the people who are making
them. It's not just Americans. I don't think it's just Americans. It's just it's
Western culture people. Well, yeah.
I don't even think that because you'll see a lot of that in Japan, and that's not Western.
Well, I mean, are we widening the lens to say that people are perverts? Well, yeah, people are perverts. They're people.
Chad, go.
This is everything I hate about gaming. Seriously.
This is templates.
Yeah.
This is, can I play a Minotaur? Yes, Bob. You can play
I'm so
He's
tough.
He's a feral Minotaur. He has +4 to all his stats.
And you know what? He doesn't have any arms. So I took that minus. And he's always angry all the time. I took that. And he doesn't have any eyes either. And I took that minus. But you know what? I get Burks now. I get to make chainsaw arms so I can kill and steal boots.
And my EL is like 11, so it's really fair.
He doesn't have any feet either. And
I was going to go a completely different direction. If
I think John and I are right.
That's right.
If Daikatana has taught us nothing else, and it hasn't, it's that stitching together monsters and machinery in some very random mosaic does not make for good enemies in a video game.
All I'm going to say is they put a chainsaw on somebody once, and it worked. And it worked awesomely, and that's the only time it should have been done.
So
now it's just cliche.
Army of Darkness.
Hell yeah.
Dan was looking at me expectantly.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Continue.
That was good. That is bad.
I do love that picture. That's a funny-ass picture. Okay, it's just me. Fine. I like
it. No, it's really stupid.
I like the picture.
I hate it. It's everything that I hate about hatred.
Oh,
here's the other thing I hate about gaming.
Oh, I got your Northern Aggression right here, bitches.
You know what? Steampunk is so overdone. I like steampunk, but...
Really?
Yeah,
I haven't seen
steampunk's totally jumped the shark.
Outside,
I think Corey,
like Arcanum and Deadlands, I mean
Corey Doctorow has totally rode that shark. Yeah.
Well, I guess all right. So are you talking about media in general? Are you talking about role playing games?
No, I'm talking about media in general.
Okay,
I think that it's
role playing games.
How much steampunk media is really released?
A lot on the internet.
Yeah,
I guess if you cruise nerd sites,
Moto, and they've got like,
I do cruise nerd sites, like, and it's overdone. It's up there. I mean,
you know, the interesting thing about steampunk though is it's a very bottom up thing, not a top down thing, because like. John, you were just commenting. I'm scratching my head on the same thing.
Yeah, when was the last time a hit steampunk novel came?
I'm coming up
I can
with
think
a really...
of animes
Here's
and
the
RPGs.
Thing.
I cannot think of a single big movie, a single TV show that got off the ground.
Well, here's the thing, is that people, I'm talking people on the internet have killed steampunk for me. Now, granted, there's some really cool steampunk costumes and different stuff out there.
Right.
But it has gotten to a point to where if you hot glue a gear on anything, it's steampunk. If you hot glue a gear to your ass, you are now in a steampunk costume. You are steampunk robotic Dan.
Cool.
A single gear. And it's just like, you have a guy in blue jeans t-shirt, a pair of chucks, and a black t-shirt with a witty saying on it, but he has a pair of homemade cardboard spray-painted brass goggles. That's an awesome, awesome steampunk costume.
Well, to explain my thought from earlier about it being a bottom-up thing, I can think of a very small number of novels, movies, video games, role-playing games that are steampunk. I mean, obviously, they're out there, but they're not nearly as prevalent or prolific as fantasy, science fiction, romance.
Almost any other
legitimate genre?
Cut of even just a fantasy sci-fi.
I think I'm not going to diss this as an illegitimate genre. I enjoy steampunk, yes. But I do understand what you're saying, where it's become very, very popular amongst the general fan culture of the internet to the point that it has become annoying in its overdoneness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
It's and I follow your frustration. And I don't dislike the genre.
I do enjoy the
genre. I enjoy Deadlands.
Well, okay.
I enjoyed Arcanum.
And also, the further thing that pisses me off about it...
If I'm high, I enjoy Wild Wild West.
Well, it's the further thing I hate about it is that it is the punk genre.
I take it back. Wild Wild West. That it was a major steampunk movie.
It may not have been great, but it was major.
Yeah.
And it had some really impressive special effects in it.
People just think that I really like cyberpunk. I really like steampunk. So if I take something and slap punk on the end of it, it's going to be really cool. There's diesel punk, clockwork punk, water punk, magic punk. All these different...
some water punk showed up in my email box the other day.
Some water... Yeah. There's all these different... sub genres.
That's water sports.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
she was punk looking,
and it's just it's getting to a point of overdone. I mean, I'm sorry. I like quality over quantity, and it's just become so popular to
Chad,
the point.
It's easier to just make more things.
Yeah.
How many of you guys have had to take away somebody's familiar because they were abusing it?
Never.
I have had to
because
eat
I have good players.
Mount. My paladin mount flies over here. My paladin mount uses his 3 attacks and kills all the orcs. Paul, you tied your paladin mount up before you went into the dungeon. You came out. He's gone. His tattered legs are left to the tree. The chain has flesh hanging out of it. But he was so strong! Nothing could kill my horse! Nope. He's dead. Figure it out. Something killed him.
I had to kill a guy's... He had a flying familiar bird or an owl. I don't remember which. I think it was an owl. I don't remember. I had to kill it because he abused it all the time. And I think this was a second edition game where the death of a familiar was a...
Mine was a second edition game,
too. It was a big deal. Yeah. This was not like, oh, I'll just recast and resummon. The loss of a familiar was...
What's the difference between abusing and using?
A familiar, according to the spirit of the law, is...
D&D does not have a spirit of the law. D&D has the letter of the law.
Well, okay, but we can even...
D&D's law is beneath DM law.
But here's the idea of a familiar is that you have something that is a special animal that's an extension of yourself. You even imbue a part of your life essence into this thing. You are bound to it. It's your helper, but it's a part of you, and you are a part of it. And this was reflected like in the 2E rules, and the fact that if it died, you lost was a point of constitution or something.
I think it was a level and or a point of constitution.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty brutal ordeal. And so the idea is that you have this thing that, yeah, it's going to help you, but this is not your disposable scout. And this guy, he never stuck to that spirit. It was always... Everywhere they went, I'm going to have my bird fly ahead and check this. I can board them. It's like, you do realize that's dangerous.
Third edition fixed the bird trick by introducing the toad, which gives the sorcerer +2 con. If you don't take the toad, you fail.
And so finally, he had it overfly this massive goblinoid. This is Forgotten Realms, so the goblinoid races are goblins and orcs and all kinds of other different things. And just defecating all over themselves and killing everything in their path. And he had it overfly that army, and they shot it down. And I gave them 3 shots at it, and one of them rolled a 20. It's like, they killed it. And he's like, why would they kill it? I'm like, well, first of all, they've got shaman of their own. They're not completely stupid. They know what a familiar is. And secondly, they're killing and eating everything in their way anyway. That's how they survive.
And I don't know. I don't think that I would have killed it. I
would have.
It got very...
Go watch
the
Lost Battalion. They try to use a messenger pigeon, and the crowd shoot it down. That's what happened to your pigeon.
I mean, the thing is if the guy is abusing it, like you're saying, I mean, he's basically using it as a spy satellite, not as a familiar or pet.
Yes, exactly.
But I think there's a lot of other different things that you can do. I mean, for one, you could talk to the guy, which I assume you did, because you're like that, and I assume that he didn't change, because I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And... You know, on the other hand, I would change it up a little bit.
I'm just going to write a name down.
Yeah.
And you can tell me if that's who you...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But I think one of the other things you can do is kind of do some interpretational things. Like, you don't have direct mind vision with the bird or whatever, but the bird comes back to you and reports what he saw.
But I think
it's from a bird perspective.
At least in third edition, they had a chart of, like, what your level of empathic power was.
Yes,
at first level, you could feel his emotions, and then at, like, 20th, you could straight up have full conversations in your mind with each other.
The thing is that it just seems to me that in D&D, isn't that really what the familiar is supposed to be anyway, is a spy satellite?
Well,
I mean,
I found a great solution.
You killed it.
No, but to keep it from happening again, I killed his first one, but to keep it from happening again, I found a great solution, which is a common sense duh sort of thing that probably... a lot of people listening do anyway, and it was this is like self-discovery of a wall by walking into it. I gave the second one a personality.
Right.
And
I really, really am sad that one D&D campaign where you rolled for my toad and you got it surprisable and incontinent.
It was curious.
Curious and incontinent. I love that
much
toad,
like,
and he never was born.
Wow.
But if we ever play fantasy, Dan, I get that toad.
Well, if you stick around for long enough, I still intend to rerun that campaign for this group of people because
I ain't going anywhere.
Best D&D campaign I've ever had. I would love to run it again. But for a second one, I don't remember what its personality traits were, but it had a much more willful personality, not to the point that it was useless to him. I wasn't being a jerk, but it was the type of thing where if he was like, go overfly that orc army, he'd be like, you go overfly that orc army. You know, he was not going to just be the suicide.
Well, and you're supposed to do that with anything else. Charmed monsters, henchmen. The DM is told, if the player character tells this thing, go throw yourself into the mouth of the dragon, don't let him do it just because he's nominally controlling it most of the time.
Well, remember Phil and his stupid druid who really enjoyed burning down forests, and we couldn't convince Phil that you're playing a druid. A guy ran up a tree, and to get him down, he wanted to light the tree on fire. And we're like, Phil, you're a druid.
Not Michael Caine.
No. So anyway, he had a wolf companion sort of thing, a pet. I don't think it was a familiar, but it was a pet. And basically,
Nobody at this table just catch my Dark Knight reference?
No.
No? All right, continue.
No, we cared.
All right.
So anyway, Phil had this wolf.
About
and
burning a
Michael
tree?
Michael Caine burning down the bat. Batman's
no,
house.
No, in Dark Knight, there's one point where Bruce Wayne asks Alfred, said, did you ever catch the thief? And he said, yeah. And he said, how? And he said, we burned down the bloody forest.
Oh.
Continue. It's not funny when you have to explain it. Go on, Chad. Druid should not be burning down forests.
What did Mark Twain say, that explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog? You learn a lot about both, but both are dead in the end.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So, anyway, he had this wolf, and I don't want to say he abused it, but he definitely neglected it. I forget if the Game Master was me or somebody else, but, you know, the Game Master was kind of playing it, and Phil couldn't remote control it, and the Game Master wouldn't let him ignore it, so he just neglected it. And he kind of sort of abused it, and we're like, Phil, you're a druid! You're a druid! You're a hippie! Love this!
He was a dysfunctional druid.
The guy who does the opposite of what's normal is at every game table, and Phil's not that way all the time, but he is sometimes.
Well, my character and I took a shining to this animal, and I started role-playing with it, or the person controlling it, you know, my character role-playing with the animal, and we had a couple of fun scenes with it. Well, it just kind of seemed real natural that it stopped being Phil's pet and started being my pet. So you can do that. You know, if somebody's abusing a familiar, have it switch loyalties.
Along those lines, what is the strangest mount or familiar or animal companion? Well, we'll take this all the way out. You've ever let somebody have?
Bowmaster.
Oh, really? That'd be a heck of a familiar.
Well, mount. You said a mount.
Okay, or that's a mech, not a mount. All right, I guess I
they viewed them as their horses. All right.
Okay, fair enough. Mm. But
I don't think any of my players had any stupid... I've had stupid familiars. I was playing some sort of diabolical sorcerer one time in a short-lived internet game, and it was a drow, a breakaway dark elf, and his familiar was a slime. I think
that's awesome.
I think that was because it was the toad equivalent and it got me my constitution. But for the brief time that character lived, I enjoyed having my pouch full of goo.
The strangest thing ever allowed, and this was completely dumb on my part, I was a very young GM at the time.
It was a 57 Chevy in a fantasy campaign.
No, that actually, at least there'd be a story there. You know, my grandpa...
No, you think that, but you haven't seen Fantasy Mission Force.
I got a story about old cars here in a second, I'll tell you. Was I allowed somebody to have a griffin.
That's stupid.
Which was outlandishly powerful, and he abused the absolute hell out of it.
There's no way to not abuse that. If you use it, you've abused it.
The same guy later had... I think it was Animal Companions, and he had a pair of boars, which was completely rules legal. So second edition D&D, this was years ago. It was completely rules legal. And the boars dominated every fight. Just because of the attacks they had or the hit dice or something, they just dominated every fight.
Boars in real life will kill you.
Boars are extremely aggressive. People hunt wild boars, and they have these boar spears. It's like a long blade, and then it's got about... maybe a foot and a half up the blade, it's got these side blades that stick out. And the point of it is that when you spear a boar, the boar will literally keep trudging and work itself up the shaft of the spear to try to get to you. And so these side blades are to stop it.
I have a...
That's how ruthless these things are.
I have a
are.
Book of swords with a lot of photos in it. I'll have to bring it in and show you, Pat, that there is a boar hunting sword. Uh-huh. And it's the same concept.
Yeah, because I didn't know that before. I read that, and I'm like, wow. And so that's always stuck with me, that yes, a wild boar, and you know, it's like Lord of the Flies, that kind of thing, you know, and that kind of, whatever. That's what they will do. They will do that with their dying breath. They will try to get to you and gore you.
I've never read that book.
My ironic story here is my paternal grandfather Okay, so this is a side that comes from the South. Very conservative, Southern, obviously white guy. I was sitting there talking to my dad a couple months ago. We were doing lunch together, and we just got to talking about cars. And he started telling me about all the cars that he had owned throughout his life and then went back to his father. My grandpa had a 1964 Impala.
Wow.
He had a 6.0.
That's hilarious.
You know, one thing that I love that I wish there was more of, and I know we've mentioned this on the show, is mini games or micro games spun off from role-playing games and war games that are based on sports. Blood Bowl, great example. Chad, what was the Gang War one we used to play?
Necromunda.
And there's that new Blood Bowl video game coming out, which I'm eagerly looking forward to for the simple reason that they kept Lizardmen in there as an army. I'm just a huge fan of Lizardmen.
Have they taken them out of Warhammer Vanilla?
If you look at the Blood Bowl armies, there were a lot more races than they were going to put into the game, and so obviously things had to get dropped.
It was back in the day, Lizardmen was like one of the starting armies.
Yeah,
they were like half the world.
But Lizardmen made the cut, which, because I remember with Dawn of War, the first round of it, my greatest annoyance was that they never put in the Tyranid, which was my favorite race. That, I mean, they even went through trouble putting in the worthless Dark Elves, and they never put in the Tyranid.
People would have been like, hey, it's the Zerg.
And, yeah.
but the Zerg are the Tyranid.
I know, but how many people realize these things?
Gabe on, or Tycho on the arcade does.
Oh, yeah.
There's this, to be entirely fair,
there's a great strip about that, actually.
There have been insectoid collective alien villains since well before the Tyranid.
Well, yeah, and the Tyranid even are, at least in appearance, shamelessly ripped off from the art of H.R. Geiger. Yeah, and
well,
blah,
I mean,
blah,
look
blah.
At, well, look at, oh, the Heinlein book. Starship Troopers.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Starship Troopers. I mean, when did that come out? The 60s? I mean, that's
the 50s.
I mean, that's totally Heinlein, totally ripped off Games Workshop. Mm-hmm.
They were communists. They didn't have identities. They were a soulless,
a hive,
mindless
collective.
Fighting force.
Yeah.
And they were deadly efficient because they had no.
And they had huge, fat, bloated leaders who did nothing but
that's
lead.
That's true.
Yep.
Brain bugged.
Speaking of like the Starship Troopers movie, which.
I'm speaking of the book. The movie is a parody of the book.
Well,
the movie is a joke in and of itself.
I completely agree. But
they sucked out his brain. That's the best Michael Ironside quote ever. I love that.
But the movie was an adaptation of a quote-unquote modernization. I'm using these terms very, very loosely here. Of
bastardization is
the movie was
for.
Paul Verhoeven taking the message of the book
and
turning it on its head and laughing at it.
He did what Verhoeven did with Verhoeven dust to absolutely everything he touches.
Takes a dump on it?
Yeah, precisely. But lately, there's been a whole spate of kind of reimagining of older intellectual properties. The G.I. Joe movie.
There's an Alice in Wonderland movie coming out.
Yeah, an Alice
in
Wonderland movie.
Have you seen
out.
The production stills for that?
I've seen one 360-degree tourney web picture thing. It looks pretty crazy.
They have pictures of Alice and the Mad Hatter and Tweedledee and Tweedledum. That movie looks up.
Yes,
it looks
does.
Really good.
I think I'm going to hate it, but that's a...
Well, that's just because you hate Tim Burton.
Yes.
You know he's not,
also,
he's not directing.
Well, and it's not producing. Claymation. It's actually
yeah,
a
it's CG.
Who's playing Alice? You know?
Some person we've never heard of.
Oh,
I read her name and it was like
a jumble of
consonants.
To totally further derail this, you want to know another movie that's coming out that looks absolutely fantastic?
Yes.
Nine. It's the number 9.
Yeah.
It looks great.
Have all four Beatles in it?
No, it doesn't have a single Beetle in it. It's post-apocalyptic, and it's basically machine versus man, and the scientists created these little itty-bitty robots, and the machines won, and then the robots wake up, and then they have to...
So it's Mega Man.
Fight the robots.
Sounds awesome.
Only cooler.
I don't know if that's possible.
You know
it
what I'm going to imagine,
really, really
just
good.
To keep this really cool, is I'm going to pretend that the name 9 was taken from the series 9 from Crush, Kill, and Destroy 2.
It might be.
And that's how it's going to be.
You know,
it's
Mega not, Man but, is how you should reimagine an old franchise. Mega Man 9, they use fake 8-bit graphics. You can turn on an NES slowness emulator for when it gets overloaded. It's a hard game, but that's how you should do it.
All right, Mega Man 9, perfect example. Leads right into exactly what I wanted to talk about. So we see all these reimaginings of older intellectual properties for movies, for toy lines, for things like that. But you know what seems to be really lacking is doing that for role-playing games.
What do you mean?
No.
D&D 4th edition?
No. What I mean is Vampire,
Catalyst
the
games,
whatever.
All the Shadowrun Battletech stuff? And
Transformers RPG, G.I. Joe RPG, Thundercats RPG,
licensing?
He-Man RPG. You see all this stuff coming out as movies.
They licensed the RPGs in the 80s the first time around, and they haven't done it yet again?
Because they lost their asses,
well, many
probably.
Of them, they know, I don't think they ever had an RPG at all.
Well, I don't think it's really necessary, because there's huge fan communities out there for each of these things, and there are accepted, quote-unquote, fan-made role-playing games for whatever flavor of system you have, or completely invented systems, out there for free on the internet. And now you have to come into the market competing against that. I think that you'd have marketing on your side, so it would be a fight, but
you can
have
definitely
to spend the money for the light
with production value. The Battlestar Galactica role-playing book looks amazing.
I mean,
I don't say that, but if I was into it, I would.
I don't say it'd be a total flop, but when you're looking at it from a business standpoint, I mean, you're basically, you're not going into a new market and you're just competing against other, like, do I want to play D&D or do I want to play the Transformers role-playing game competition? You're in against, do I want to pay $20 for a well-put-together, well-marketed Transformers role-playing game book, or do I want to use the free Transformers role-playing game that Dan wrote that I've been playing for years? Or maybe not even that Dan wrote, that somebody else put up on the internet, or the Savage World Transformers.
Well, but I think you can make the same argument about any role-playing game. I mean, there are fan-created mecha games.
That's why,
and
Chad, when was the last time you bought a fantasy RPG book? Any RPG book.
I can't even say Savage Worlds because that was a gift.
Yeah. That last one I acquired was the Savage Worlds gifts.
Well, I was about to say godlike, but no, that too
was a gift. The last one I bought, it was probably a supplement around the middle of the third edition era. It was probably 5 years ago.
Yeah.
We are useless to them.
Yeah. Legend of the Five Rings, I bought some of that, but that system really disappointed
Gygax
me.
Told us we didn't need the books.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
guys like you and I believe him.
For a guy who also said, I have no use for the theatrics of gaming, for the role play, the sort of high art that we...
No, he would mock us relentlessly for thinking about it way too much.
But he,
and we do, but
what
whatever.
What he said about you don't need the books, to me, runs totally counter to the fact that he doesn't like the role play.
It makes you wonder, because he made fun of the people who took the drama seriously.
Yeah.
And he apparently looked at the combat rules in disdain.
Yeah.
So, what else is there?
I know. Beer and hanging out with your buddies.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, and we do that much more often than we actually game.
I think probably what we're seeing is just the over-exuding cynicism of that era of role players.
Probably. I mean, those guys were beaten down by the world in ways that guys my age can't imagine.
You know, I wish, though, despite whatever you guys are saying, I really do wish people would dust off some of those old intellectual properties, and just as they're remaking them into movies and such, remake some into role-playing games. Because
I both agree and disagree with you. I agree with the spirit of what you're saying. Yes, I would love to see that. I'd love to see a very well-put-together Transformers game.
I'm already anaphylaxis over what they'll do with them.
But yeah, but then I look at stuff that's already out there. Robotech? Wonderful franchise.
Yeah.
Horrible role.
Well, that's the
it
thing.
Is a
if they publish these games today,
game.
They're going to be fast and loose rules.
Yep.
They're going to look like 4th edition because everything out there except Vampire is derivative of D&D. And
well, what would
you're not going to like them.
What would worry me more than that is that they would peg them to the current reimaginings. That if
and
tomorrow,
they would.
If tomorrow Hasbro decides through WotC to put out a Transformers role-playing game, it's not going to be based on the comic books or the Generation 1.
The stats for Sam Witwicky would be in there, and that's who you would play.
Yeah, it's going to be based on the current movies. Yeah.
Now,
and that's what would make me hemorrhage blood from my
they
eyes.
Are taking licenses and making really good games with them. And because I was thinking, like, what about the indie market? The indie market can make some really, really good role-playing games that aren't combat intensive or poor quality or just really crappy. They can make some very good ones, but I've noticed that the indie market goes after new stuff. I mean, I'll use Mouse Garden as an example. That's a new comic. It's a very, very good comic book, but it's very new. And then I also noticed that the indie market also tends they make their own rule system. They do their own thing their own way. So they make their own properties. They make their own licenses. I don't think the indie market's really interested in licensing the old stuff.
And they don't have the cash.
And they don't have the cash for license fees.
Bob in his basement may very well make a better role-playing game than the professional crew over at, you know, Wizard Subsidy number 12. They're not going to give it to them.
How many Transformers role-playing games would you have to sell just to pay for the license? Especially after the movies just came out.
Yeah, more than you would.
More than you would, yeah.
To sell, so.
Well, the license is not an arbitrary cost. Oh, it is an arbitrary cost. The license costs whatever they charge for it. If they could find some number where everyone made out worth it, then they could license it. And I guarantee that number exists. But, you know, maybe they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if you guys want to see the pictures that inspired this episode, be sure to go out to the show notes, and I will link it off there.
And I would have to say that if you don't, this isn't going to make a whole lot of sense.
No, you'll get a whole bunch of kind of disjointed topics that I hope were at least entertaining. But next episode, we will be back to our usual format. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you then.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at PulpGamer.com.